Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You know, sometimes you just need a different take on today's sports news, and that's just what we're going to do.
Woo-hoo! I say, sports fans.
A fresh look at the headlines is here with the Dopey Millennial Show.
Your one-stop shop for sports talk.
Getting what the ATL needs. A fresh weekend sports talk show.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's just get down to it.
Now, the Dopey Millennial Show is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on 92.9 The Game, going until 8 o'clock this evening, when we'll actually be followed by an Atlanta United 2 match. I believe, I could be mistaken, this is the first time that we have had Atlanta United 2 on this station. As they're taking on New England. So you're getting all kinds of different things you never heard before. Just a few weeks ago, or I guess it's a couple months at this point, we had the Atlanta Dream on the station for the first time, making sure that we get you the full sports landscape here at 92.9 The Game. It's been a good week for me. And I want to start there. From the perspective of, and I feel like a lot of you can relate to this, where you have plenty of weeks where life just gets a little bit monotonous, just same old, funny enough, you know, you see somebody and they're like, hey man, what you been up to? Ah, nothing. Cause they really just like, just been going to work, coming home, doing the regular, you know, same old kind of stuff. Well, that was not my week this week. This week, I actually had some stuff going on. More so in the, like, last minute category as far as going into the week. Didn't really think I had much going on. But, like, as things unfolded, I went to a last minute concert to start things off. Went to go see somebody that I probably, in years past, would have just had zero interest, anything like that. AJR, they're very much like a pop kind of punk alternative, make kind of like techno pop-ish music. But they're a lot of fun, and doing things last minute, you care less about all of the specifics of the things that you're doing. Like, you know, I just wanted to grab cheapest seat, just get in to State Farm Arena, check things out. However, if you're someone who has mastered the game of the resale market, I'm giving away free game here if you don't already know, and probably telling on myself a little bit in the same span as well. But, and I'll bring producer Dom in on this as well, because you might do this. Have you ever gone to a concert, sporting event, gone to your seats, and were like, these are fine. However, I would love a better experience. So, the, like, correct way you could handle this at some venues is you go, you have the ability to upgrade. Like, I've been to a concert before where there were people walking around with signs that, like, you could upgrade your seats from sitting on the lawn to sitting further up for X amount of dollars or whatever. Or you can go to a resale app, take a peruse onto the sections and the rows that have available seats, and just find your way into a new opportunity. So that's exactly what I did this week. Going to a concert, went to the seats, realized of like, oh, this is why these were the cheapest on the app, because like you almost can't see the stage because you're just like that far over.
Right, right.
To ending up in like really really great view. That probably would have cost me about like four times what I paid. Because I looked it up later just as interested to see. And ended up having great experience other than parking. Parking in this city, Dom, is wild.
Terrible.
Terrible experience
every time.
It's one of those, and you know, I'm spoiled, and I'm fully aware of it, because most sporting events that I attend, I am going there as media. I'm going there to work the event. I'm not there to enjoy it as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I forget, man. Going to a concert, I going to this concert this week, I thought I was doing the smart thing, looking ahead, being like, "Oh, I'm gonna go ahead and prepay for some parking in a spot that I use frequently as a media member, just so I don't have to worry about it when I get down there. I'm not a person that carries cash, so I don't like to deal with all of that sort of thing. And I'm a little bit bougie that if I can have my car in a covered area, I would prefer it. But that's more of a me thing. Pulling up an app to do that, like I think it was Park Mobile or whatever, and seeing my options started at $65, that I was like, hold on, I'm going to spend as much or more than the tickets that I purchased very last minute that were pretty cheap. And then it was like there was a legitimate area of parking, the Diamond Deck, $135 for parking. I just was like, ain't no way. So I ended up overspending for parking.
You're hitting on something that I feel very passionate about, and that is paying for parking should be illegal. I've hated this idea even as a child. Like, it just doesn't make sense. If you want me to come to your venue, I'm already going to spend money there. Then asking me, hey, you want the convenience of like not having to walk 15 minutes to find your car?
Yeah.
Here, pay us another $100 just to park here.
See, that's the thing is, I'm not completely out on paying to park, as long as it's reasonable. But as I have seen more and more, because there was a sporting event that I was going to cover last year. It was a one-off event in the city on the same day as some other things going on, and as a media member, they just told me they ran out of parking. They were just like, oh, yeah, well, sorry, we gave all the parking passes away. So I was like, well, that's really lame. But I found this out as I was going to the event and then got to the city, and my options were like 60, 80, 100, 120. And I was like, cool, you know what? I'm going home. And I took right. my butt home. Right. And I was like, I'll watch this thing on TV and tweet about it from the couch, because ain't no way that I'm spending that. So for you fans out there who do this on a regular basis, shout out to you, because I can't imagine. Ain't no way. I'm just I'm way too frugal a person to be paying more than, honestly, I feel like my cap is like $30. And that even feels way too much.
You will get $0 out of me for parking.
You know where I had to pay for parking recently that blew my mind? Because so a new doctor that I had to go to was at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They make you pay to park at the hospital.
Yep.
I was like, what do we do? And it's funny because I called my dad, and he's a chaplain. So he like visits a hospital frequently. And he's like, yeah, you didn't know that? Had no idea. So this is kind of my, like, I want to give venues, especially like Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I don't know if you saw, but, you know, they tweeted out last night with the Falcons being at the Benz of, hey, look what $20 can get you in food. And it's insane. It's chicken tender basket, a hot dog, a pretzel, popcorn, a drink. I feel like there was something else in
there. Macaroni and Cheese Hut. That's my spot every time I go.
Oh, really? Okay.
Love the Macaroni and Cheese Hut. Mm-hmm.
See, another place like that's not true. I've been to more events as a fan at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but I think I typically eat before, so I end up not eating there because I am I don't want to get out of my seat once the game has started and all of that sort of thing. But showing off what $20 can get you in the stadium, incredible. However, the whole market of like, yeah, for a family, you're doing all of this savings, except for the fact that you had to spend $80 on parking unless you want to walk with your family a mile through the city and figure all of that out. That was just, sorry. I feel like this is my, I'm starting off the Dopey Millennial Show in very much a boomer way.
We're
yelling
on
at clouds.
Soapbox, yeah.
It's just one of those things that, I don't know. I felt good for just the fact that like I actually had stuff going on this week that wasn't work related or just like family related stuff of going to a concert, went to go see Deadpool and Wolverine as our company here, Odyssey Atlanta, did an incredible thing for those who were available. Hard to be available at 2 o'clock in the afternoon
on Wednesday.
Yeah. But for those of us who were, or those of us who were technically working and made arrangements to be able to go, not saying, you know, anyone did that. but incredible. Incredible. Like the amount of nostalgia, the amount of humor, the amount of giving fans what they want sometimes just works is what happened with Deadpool and Wolverine. It's also, I love a movie where you can know everything about backstory and everything to understand what's going on, or you can just be a person who's like, hey, I wanted to go to that movie. I went to that movie. Man, it was really funny and fun. Which is, I think they nailed that aspect. Because, you know, sometimes superhero in the Marvel world takes themselves very seriously. And you walk in, especially to a sequel or a series, and you gotta, man, if you didn't watch the movie before, 15 minutes before you walked in and got all that stuff fresh, you're out. You're lost.
Yeah,
you got no clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I thought Deadpool and Wolverine handled it exceptionally well of you could know or you could have no clue. Now, if you did know all the backstory, it makes things a lot funnier for certain elements that they decided to include. But then, just as a casual fan, absolutely could be a casual fan and enjoy it. The one thing I do wonder about, and this is my second old man yelling at cloud, I'm getting very concerned, Dom, with the amount of sequels that we're just getting sequeled and follow-up series to death right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's kind of been the whole Marvel thing. You know, we got to build this stuff out and everything has to intertwine. So,
it's going out into other things as well. Like we just got the Twisters reboot
for like outside of.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Like we're getting reboots. We're getting remakes. We're getting sequels. And everyone always goes with the whole idea of, well, there's just not enough original ideas. No, there are plenty of original ideas.
They're just not in Hollywood, unfortunately.
And they're not moneymakers, I guess. And so if you're not the big moneymakers, it's not going that way. All right, we've got tons to get into. Thanks for letting me get some old man yelling at cloud off my chest to start off the show here on the Dopey Millennial Show. We're going to come back, get into, are the Braves back? We'll talk about it next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back.
Let's get back to the show now.
It's the Dopey Millennial Show.
Get out of your mind!
From Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you going until 8 o'clock this evening. We got some really good news today when it comes to the Atlanta Braves. And no, it's not related to the fact that they won last night. But without any further ado, let's get right into the rest of the story.
Now,
Now,
the rest of the story.
All right, let's start our headlines with the Atlanta Braves, who we found out today, Max Fried is starting tomorrow. He's back. So that is really good news for this lineup, who, needs him, quite honestly, as this team is trying to put together some wins as they're trying to catch up to the Philadelphia Phillies. Something that, as recent, it's wild. It's wild that a week ago, I was doing this show. It was Sunday. I was doing this show. Just learned about Reynaldo Lopez and his injury that day. And it was like, the trade deadline was coming up, but there wasn't much conversation about what the Braves were going to do. And I felt like this is it. Throw in the towel. It's over. Like, I will hear all of the people that say it's not over till it's over. But it just felt like the Reynaldo injury was one that, combined with everything else, not winning, was like, all right, this just ain't it. And in the span of a week, things have turned around so much. Now, you have to take it with an absolute grain of salt, as including wins over the Miami Marlins doesn't exactly make you feel like you're about to win the World Series. Now, beating the Brewers definitely has you feeling some type of way, and splitting with the Mets, the way that series ended last weekend, had you feeling like things were headed in a positive direction. It's really going to be hard, I think, to figure out where the Braves are at, just if this thing is for real or not, given that, yes, they've got the Brewers after this. And so if you lose 2 out of 3, are you going to make too much of that? Or is it just going to be like, hey, you just saw this team recently, and so maybe they figure something out? If you take 2 out of 3 from them, do you make too much of it? Just because you're following it up with Colorado, a team that's just terrible. The San Francisco Giants just traded away one of their better players to you. So how good are they really going to be? The Angels coming up, it's going to be really hard to figure out. So it's not going to be, I think, until the 20th of this month when you face the Phillies, of how close is that race when the 20th comes around? Because it's 5 games right now. And if I remember correctly, the Phillies are about to go play some tough teams. I mean, already getting swept by the Yankees this week. They've got to go. Yeah, they're taking on the Mariners right now. They lost 10-2 last night. Then the Dodgers. Then the very much streaky, but streaking in a positive way, currently Arizona Diamondbacks. Like, they're going to face some really tough competition before, well, they get a couple of games from Miami and the Nationals heading into Atlanta. However, it feels like they've got a much more difficult route to that matchup when these two teams face off in late August that will certainly start to determine where the National League East is going. Now, when it comes to last night, the Braves beat the Marlins 5-3, got their 60th win of the season. That was earlier in the season. A game like last night absolutely is a loss, just for the simple fact of getting behind early. I think it was down like 3-0 in the third. Then you get a home run from Orlando Arcia in the fifth. But I feel like in times past, that might have been just about all the offense you would have gotten, quite honestly. However, with Merrifield, who I am not particularly high on, but he is at least a better option than Nacho Alvarez, he gets a triple in the sixth and ends up scoring off of Austin Riley. You end up going small ball and scoring three runs in the eighth. And then he wasn't great, but he was certainly good enough. Spencer Schwellenbach, a guy who I thought when they called him up, he was just like most that we have kind of seen from the Braves as of late, out of a need, out of kind of a more of a desperation thing, or like, yeah, just not ready yet. You know, Hurston Waldrop was in the same position, at least I thought. I was putting those two guys in kind of the same camp as like, yeah, I just think it's a little bit too early. But I think what Spencer has shown over the course of his outings has been, yes, he is very much young. And yes, part of the problem has been that when you have sent Spencer Schwellenbach out there, you need those wins. And so to have a guy that you're just unsure about makes things even more critical, and you get more frustrated a guy like that. But he has really kind of proven himself established as a, what should be, a fifth starter in this rotation. Pitched seven innings last night, gave up six hits, three earned runs, but struck out 10. Felt like a really, really good game from Spencer Schwellenbach. The Braves now have gone on a 6-1 run since having a six-game losing streak. Grant Holmes is going to get the start tonight. That'll be in about an hour from now. I think Grant Holmes has started to shift the storyline from feel-good story, like feel-good, oh, this is a guy who spent 10 years in the minors, finally got his opportunity. I think he has turned the corner to legitimate part of the Braves pitching staff. Now, is it as a starter? I don't think so. I think he is more of a bullpen guy, but he has been able to fill a need right now and is getting the start tonight after pitching against the Brewers last week. That wasn't a loss, but it wasn't because of Grant Holmes, as Grant Holmes' last start, five innings, gave up three hits, just one earned run while striking out eight. It's been a really, like I said, fun story with Grant Holmes, but he is a legitimate baseball player, legitimate pitcher, who I think, you know, deserves a role on this staff, especially as this team deals with injuries. Now, I mentioned Max Fried is going to start on Sunday. However, a little bit of a strange thing that I feel like I have a bit of a take when it comes to Reynaldo Lopez, and the fact that we were told, oh, he's probably not even going to miss his next start. But then we learned today that Reynaldo hasn't thrown like a side session or anything yet, and it is possible that he could still go on the injured list. I wonder if a couple of things were going on, if the fact that Reynaldo's injury lined up very close to the trade deadline and the Braves didn't want to be taken advantage of at the deadline by anybody going like, oh, well, you absolutely need a starter because now you're down another one with Reynaldo. If maybe there were some games played, some gamesmanship of, hey, maybe this guy is a little bit more hurt and needs to go to the injured list, but if we can delay this thing till after the trade deadline, then maybe we are able to get an arm. Ultimately, they didn't decide to go that route. Just one of those things I wonder about. Or if it was just simply a, hey, all the tests come back negative, it looks fine, we're just being a little bit cautious. All of that comes into play, and so it'll be interesting to see how things play out with Reynaldo Lopez. All right, continuing in the rest of the story, USA Basketball, they're on to the knockout round of the Olympics as the top seed after getting the 104-83 win over Puerto Rico, who is, I think they came into this game eliminated already, but this, you know, kind of sealed the deal even further, and it was more of a, the U.S. needed to win by, I believe, 5 points to get the point differential to have the top seed. Well, that was pretty easy, as this was for sure the Anthony Edwards game. He had 26 points in this one, as well as a nasty breakaway windmill dunk in the fourth quarter that I have now seen right before the show. Someone has taken a freeze frame from that windmill dunk and a freeze frame of an iconic photo of Michael Jordan, and they are making the same, like, face, pose, the whole bit. Like, it's a whole run the DNA test, because those guys play so much alike and are so very similar. that it, you know, just for the conspiracy theorist out there, you get to run wild with that one. I just think it's funny because, like, Anthony Edwards is one of the, in a generation that, as a millennial, I know I'm a dopey millennial, but I get to make fun of Gen Zers who, like, don't have an original thought in their brain. They're just memes and recreating things. And so seeing a guy like Anthony Edwards, who was one of the most original players in the NBA and is a Gen Zer, recreating a photo completely unintentional, I find hilarious. But it just kind of adds to the lore around Anthony Edwards. The high for a player in Team USA basketball in an Olympic game is 34 points. Carmelo Anthony had that. So Anthony Edwards came close. We also got headband LeBron in this game, which was fun, even though he didn't play as much as we've seen him play in other games, which is probably a good thing. Ended up with, you know, just a cool 10 points, 8 assists, 6 rebound game. Drew Holiday was held out for this one for what they're calling precautionary reasons, as he got his ankle rolled up on against South Sudan. And then I thought it was also interesting, we got Jason Tatum and Joel Embiid in the starting lineup together because of the Drew Holiday injury. Those guys have kind of been replaced one for the other. Of course, the whole controversy around Jason Tatum not starting. And then you had a game where Joel Embiid didn't start. I think the most obvious thing for me is watching these games is that, like, Joel Embiid does not fit this team. And I heard someone this week go as far to say they think the only reason Joel Embiid is on this team is because Team USA didn't want him playing for France, which is like, ooh, that's a conspiracy that I can get behind. Because could you imagine a lineup in France of Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama, and Joel Embiid? Like, that's nasty. And also, who starts? Just, you know, general question, like, do you start all three of those guys? Matchup nightmare. It just feels like he doesn't fit on this team. It was definitely obvious. It's painfully obvious at times that, like, Team USA was feeding him the ball to get him going offensively because he eats up so much like when he has the ball in his hands. The offense just does not flow nearly as nice when Joel Embiid is in the game. But other than that, this team absolutely looks poised to roll to a gold medal. I thought Canada was going to be a team that would give them a real run for their money. But then I saw, like, Jamal Murray's stats. That man shooting 10% from 3-point in the tournament, averaging 5 points a game. Yikes. Like, they have a bunch of NBA players, but I don't know that they're playing nearly as well as people expected them to. And so I just don't know that there's anyone to really give them a run for their money. All right, one thing I wanted to get into real quick before we get out of the rest of the story. The Hawks waived Bruno Fernando this week. So that clears up something for that roster. They signed Dominic Barlow to a two-way contract. Look, the Hawks had 5 centers on the roster. They had to make a move. Unfortunately, Bruno was the odd man out because of his contract. And so he is now signed with the Toronto Raptors on a non-guaranteed deal. Meanwhile, Dominic Barlow, a really, really good two-way player, a guy who probably could have gotten a full contract with someone else, ends up in Atlanta. And the team building, the roster building, development of player guys are working out pretty well for the Atlanta Hawks. All right, when we get back, going to have a conversation with Brad Rowland about the Hawks, but more importantly, about the Atlanta Braves and what they've been able to do as of late. Brad Rowland of Hammer Territory and the Locked On Hawks podcast coming up next, about 5 minutes away, right here on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
To more of the Dopey Millennial Show.
How do real-life millennials respond?
That was fire.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
For Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show here with you on this Saturday evening. Have been doing Sundays for the last few weeks, so getting a different time slot and enjoying the time with you for a quick 2 hours this evening. Look, as we mentioned earlier in the show, last segment, actually, just the excitement that's been around this Braves team as of late, as the Braves win last night 5-3 over the Miami Marlins. This team is actually 6-1 since losing six straight, and all of the conversation around this team has shifted into a very positive way, which is ironic given I was one of those people a week ago ready to jump off the ship and be like, hey, look, I just don't think it can be fixed this year. The Braves are proving a lot of us wrong, even if we don't know if it'll stick around. However, we're going to get into a conversation. Go out to the waitfor.com hotline right now and bring in Brad Rowland. He's a host of Hammer Territory, as well as he's a versatile guy, a host of Locked On Hawks. And we'll get into some Hawks conversation with Brad in a bit. You can follow Brad on social media at BT Rowland. Brad, how you doing on this Saturday, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me here in early August. Plenty to discuss. And as you mentioned, it's nice to talk about a encouragingly hot Braves team.
Yeah, well, that's been the thing, Brad, is like I've been doing so much of just dealing with the reality of, hey, I hear all of you positive talkers out there. I hear the, you know, we can do this kind of thing, but you just don't really know until you see it play out. And quite honestly, it feels like when we've seen this team have those really positive moments, it's been followed by injuries and disappointments. But Brad, actually, I want to start and go back to the beginning of this week with the trade deadline. It felt like Alex Anthopoulos had a near impossible task, a tough task for sure, of deciding how to improve this team that's dealt with injuries, that's dealt with guys who have just had down production this season, not overspending on a team that you just don't know. Like, of course, we can say, hey, as long as you get in it, you've got a shot. But it's just hard to split all of those decisions, decide what to upgrade and what not to. What did you take away from Alex Anthopoulos deciding that, hey, I will add a bat and Jorge Soler and give me someone out in the outfield? But other than that, I'm going to stick with my guys.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that was pretty clear based on the injuries and where they have been is that they had to get an outfielder. He kind of acknowledged that after the fact. Alex did to the media, like, hey, that was the one thing we kind of had to do, was add a bat in the outfield. And they went and did that. So, you know, Jorge Soler is not like an absolute superstar, but if you look at the players that were actually traded, he was one of the best hitters on the market that actually moved. So that makes it look a little bit better, I would say. And you know, I think also coupling that with the reality that they had just gotten at least somewhat positive news about Max Fried and Ronaldo Lopez, taking away some of the urgency in the rotation that would have been there had the injuries been worse for those guys. And you kind of can like sell yourself on that. Like there were a lot of moves made around baseball at the deadline, but none of them were like the huge blockbusters.
Sure.
And I think that if you keep that sort of in context, Alex very clearly improved the roster. He didn't go crazy. He didn't remake the entire outfield like he did, you know, 3 years ago in the World Series run, but he also didn't have to this time around, I don't think. And I mean, we'll talk about it, but they were also what, 9 games back at the time, something like that, nine and a half games back. Like you don't want to go crazy, but also you need to kind of tell your team. And he mentioned this too, kind of setting an example for your clubhouse, like, hey, we're with you guys, but we're also going to help you get what you actually need to make the run that we obviously can make. And while the division title streak is interesting, and obviously they want to win the division, getting in the dance is kind of the biggest thing, and being prepared when you get there.
Were you surprised? Because I know, at least for me, I was in that, okay, you add a bat, something you needed. You add someone in the outfield, even though Jorge Soler not really playing the outfield before this for quite some time. Were you surprised that second base was a position that the Braves didn't also try to upgrade, given obviously Nacho Alvarez didn't work out? And then you're like, Whit Merrifield, yeah, you know, 35 years old, he'll be able to hold things down.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine they probably made calls at second base, but they had already gotten Merrifield. And while he's not any great shakes, like you sort of allude to there, he did bring them a little bit of professionalism at that spot. They had Nacho playing at the time, and they obviously rushed him. I think they probably would admit that out of need. He wasn't quite ready, and that's okay. Like, you know, he's very young. I was kind of skeptical that was going to work, but I didn't blame the Braves for trying it. At the same time, you know, you do have Ozzie coming back. That's the one kind of fundamental difference, you know, in the outfield. Ronnie's not coming back this year, whereas they think that Ozzie's going to be back in like a month. So you don't want to go crazy at second base knowing that you do have a, you know, top 10 second baseman coming back when he's coming back. So they obviously pretty much immediately went to Merrifield as soon as he was healthy enough to play. And I think that's a kind of a plug and play guy. Again, a pretty low level starter at this point, but someone who is an upgrade on what they were getting from Nacho, and they can kind of just like hold the line until Ozzie gets back.
And he did have a pretty nice triple last night, so that kind of adds to things as well. Talking with Brad Rowland on the WaitFor.com hotline. Brad, a host of Hammer Territory and the Locked On Hawks podcast. Brad, it's always one of those tough things of trying to figure out of, hey, is this the turning point for the Braves? But with Philly losing five straight, the National League East down to five games, what the Braves have done, you know, winning four straight, 6-1 in their last seven games, all of these sorts of things. Like, are you allowing yourself to start thinking about the possibility of the Braves getting back in this National League East race? Or is it more of just like, hey, focus on, you know, getting that wild card and just getting into the playoffs in general?
I think a week ago, I would have basically told you that I had resigned the division. Not entirely. Like, I never said it was impossible, but the deficit was pretty significant. And you never want to write this team off. You know, that famously they overcame a double-digit deficit against the Mets a few years ago. But they were, you know, like I said, down 9.5 or something like that against a Phillies team that's been awesome all year long. But this recent slippage from the Phillies, now that it's a five-game deficit as we're talking, that's very doable. I still would be sure to say the Braves are the underdogs in the National League East. Sure. It's August 3rd. Down five games on August 3rd means that you are a pretty significant dog, but you're alive. I think, you know, I saw one projection today. I think it was from Fangraphs. It was like 23% or so. That seems reasonable to me. Like, one out of every four times you might overcome this. The Braves are, I think, better than what they've performed at so far this year. I think that's pretty clear in the underlying metrics and all those things. I don't know about Philly. They're obviously backsliding right now, but they're also quite good, and that's a loaded team. But yeah, it's now a situation where I think the most important thing is getting in the playoffs, where the Braves are favored heavily to do so. But the division is a kind of move from very unlikely to somewhat unlikely, and that does matter.
Now, when it comes to a guy who's going to start tonight, it feels like so much of the conversation around Grant Holmes when he first got this opportunity was just the incredible story of a guy, you know, working in the minor leagues for 10 seasons, finally gets his opportunity, but he's been really impressive, and I've been one kind of championing Grant Holmes throughout his time up with the Braves, just because it's like, hey, more often than not, this guy has really performed. Are we at a point where the narrative and the conversation around Grant Holmes can shift from really great story into legitimate part of this pitching staff, or you don't think we're there yet?
No, I think we've kind of gotten there. You know, the story is still awesome, and I'm sure people will lead with that, whatever they talk about him. But, you know, he was really good in his first kind of like spot start earlier this week. He struck out 8 of the 18 batters that he faced and just like looked pretty dominant in a small sample size. He's been really good. I don't know if you can bank on that continuing. I don't think he's going to be like an absolutely dominant force, but as a long man, you kind of have to have somebody like him. And the Braves hadn't really settled on one guy like that this year. You know, you got Justin Chavez, who's as old as I am or older than I am at this point in time. And I think Grant Holmes is certainly valuable. Like, is he on the same tier as Iglesias or Minter or Jimenez? No, but I do trust him so far. And what I've seen is not like smoke and mirrors. Like, the underlying stuff looks good with Grant Holmes. The stuff is really impressive. And I think he's pitching at that level where he deserves respect.
All right, Brad, last one on the Braves. Has Orlando Arcia turned a corner there? Like, is that something we can finally start to expect, or is this just too small a sample size?
I think it's both. Okay. I don't think he's going to be this, because he has been like extremely hot in recent days in a way that has been totally out of character. I believe it's a 13 game hitting streak as we're speaking right now, with an OPS over 1,000 in that sample size, like a bunch of home runs. And like, you know, he had been so bad for so long that, you know, some people are like, are talking about how, like, you never should give up on Orlando. And that's true. But it's also fair to say that he was one of the worst players in baseball by the stats up until about 2 weeks ago. Sure. And now he's doing this. So I always thought he was going to be better than he had been, if that makes sense, until mid-July. Like, his talent level is better than he had been performing. He also isn't going to suddenly be Babe Ruth. So it's, of course, somewhere in the middle. I think what this does is give you some confidence, if you're the Braves, that he's not going to keep killing you the way he had been killing you. Get back to your kind of what his normal baseline is, which is this guy who is a maybe an average hitter, maybe a little bit below that, but a guy who catches the ball at shortstop, making, you know, bat lower in the lineup for you. He's hitting fifth now, which is kind of funny to me, but he's been hitting that way for the last, you know, couple of weeks now. So it's encouraging. It's a sign of him turning the corner, but also I would encourage folks not to get too carried away in the other direction.
All right. The other thing that Brad Rowland does and does very well is talks about the Atlanta Hawks on the Locked On Hawks podcast. So switching over to that, because there hasn't been a lot of news with this Hawks team this offseason, but we did see some things this past week. Specifically when it came to Bruno Fernando, a guy that not only showed some production in that center role when the Hawks were hit with injuries, but also, as you know, Brad, you know, just an incredible locker room guy, someone that the Hawks clearly wanted to keep around as they kept delaying the decision date for him as to whether they brought him back and made his contract guaranteed. They ultimately decide to waive him. He's on now to, I believe, the Toronto Raptors, but ultimately, like, how did we get here with Bruno Fernando where the Hawks wanted him but ultimately aren't able to keep him?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where he's kind of cursed by having this extremely team-friendly contract where he was the only guy that the Hawks could move on from without having to pay him. And while I do think that he was not the worst player on the roster, I do think that he is the guy that was easily moved on from. I'm glad you put it the way that you did. The Hawks clearly did not want to do this.
Yeah.
If they had wanted to do this, they would have cut him a month and a half ago when they could have. But in the end, you know, going up to the second moved deadline that they had to guarantee his contract, unless they did something else, they just couldn't justify keeping a fifth center on the roster because they would have put them over the luxury tax. They'd have extra players on the roster. I'll save all the gory details, but it was basically a move that was procedural. They didn't want to have to do it, but it was the only logical way to go without making a trade of some kind. If they were just going to try to release somebody and kind of clear their roster, he was the guy that was logical because it was non-guaranteed, which is unfortunate because, like you, everybody loves Bruno. That includes me. That includes everybody around the Hawks. It's just the way that kind of things work sometimes. At the end of your roster, you got to make some painful choices.
Now, the Hawks did sign Dominic Barlow of the Spurs to a two-way contract. Look, that surprised me just because I thought that guy was better than a two-way contract. But outside that signing, moving forward, does it feel like the Hawks are pretty much done this offseason, or could you foresee some more moves being made?
Yeah, I mean, it's always probably the smart projection to say that a team is mostly done by August 3rd. That doesn't mean that they definitely are. Like, there are some things that could happen in the NBA around, like, deadlines and trades and stuff like that that could alter things and kind of open things up for the whole league. But, you know, generally speaking, I would certainly bet on the big stuff being done. They could still make a trade for one of the centers they have on their roster. I think Capella and Nance and Okongwu, having all three of them is a little bit overlapping. I think Capella and Nance could certainly be still trade guys. I think DeAndre Hunter, if they got the right package, they could trade him, that kind of thing. But I think if you're doing the betting odds, they're more likely than not to kind of stand pat as far as the big stuff right now, just because the whole league kind of goes quiet in August.
Yeah, that's one of the DeAndre Hunter piece is the one that I had really been big on. Like, I thought the Hawks would move on.
Back to more of the Dopey Millennial Show.
How do real life millennials respond?
That was fire.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show here with you on this Saturday evening. Have been doing Sundays for the last few weeks, so getting a different time slot and enjoying the time with you for a quick 2 hours this evening. Look, as we mentioned earlier in the show, last segment, actually, just the excitement that's been around this Braves team as of late, as the Braves win last night 5-3 over the Miami Marlins. This team is actually 6-1 since losing six straight, and all of the conversation around this team has shifted into a very positive way, which is ironic given I was one of those people a week ago ready to jump off the ship and be like, hey, look, I just don't think it can be fixed this year. The Braves are proving a lot of us wrong, even if we don't know if it'll stick around. However, we're going to get into a conversation. Go out to the waitfor.com hotline right now and bring in Brad Rowland. He's a host of Hammer Territory, as well as he's a versatile guy, a host of Locked On Hawks. And we'll get into some Hawks conversation with Brad in a bit. You can follow Brad on social media at BT Rowland. Brad, how you doing on this Saturday, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me here in early August. Plenty to discuss. And as you mentioned, it's nice to talk about a encouragingly hot Braves team.
Yeah, well, that's been the thing, Brad, is like I've been doing so much of just dealing with the reality of, hey, I hear all of you positive talkers out there. I hear the, you know, we can do this kind of thing, but you just don't really know until you see it play out. And quite honestly, it feels like when we've seen this team have those really positive moments, it's been followed by injuries and disappointments. But Brad, actually, I want to start and go back to the beginning of this week with the trade deadline. It felt like Alex Anthopoulos had a near impossible task, a tough task for sure, of deciding how to improve this team that's dealt with injuries, that's dealt with guys who have just had down production this season, not overspending on a team that you just don't know. Like, of course, we can say, hey, as long as you get in it, you've got a shot. But it's just hard to split all of those decisions, decide what to upgrade and what not to. What did you take away from Alex Anthopoulos deciding that, hey, I will add a bat in Jorge Soler and give me someone out in the outfield? But other than that, I'm going to stick with my guys.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that was pretty clear based on the injuries and where they have been is that they had to get an outfielder. He kind of acknowledged that after the fact. Alex did to the media, like, hey, that was the one thing we kind of had to do was add a bat in the outfield. And they went and did that. So, you know, Jorge Soler is not like an absolute superstar, but if you look at the players that were actually traded, he was one of the best hitters on the market that actually moved. So that makes it look a little bit better, I would say. And you know, I think also coupling that with the reality that they had just gotten at least somewhat positive news about Max Fried and Ronaldo Lopez, taking away some of the urgency in the rotation that would have been there had the injuries been worse for those guys. And you kind of can like sell yourself on that. Like there were a lot of moves made around baseball at the deadline, but none of them were like the huge blockbusters.
Sure.
And I think that if you keep that sort of in context, Alex very clearly improved the roster. He didn't go crazy. He didn't remake the entire outfield like he did, you know, 3 years ago in the World Series run, but he also didn't have to this time around, I don't think. And I mean, we'll talk about it, but they were also what, 9 games back at the time, something like that, nine and a half games back. Like you don't want to go crazy, but also you need to kind of tell your team. And he mentioned this too, kind of setting an example for your clubhouse, like, hey, we're with you guys, but we're also going to help you get what you actually need to make the run that we obviously can make. And while the division title streak is interesting, and obviously they want to win the division, getting in the dance is kind of the biggest thing, and being prepared when you get there.
Were you surprised? Because I know, at least for me, I was in that, okay, you add a bat, something you needed. You add someone in the outfield, even though Jorge Soler not really playing the outfield before this for quite some time. Were you surprised that second base was a position that the Braves didn't also try to upgrade, given obviously Nacho Alvarez didn't work out? And then you're like, Whit Merrifield, yeah, you know, 35 years old, he'll be able to hold things down.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine they probably made calls at second base, but they had already gotten Merrifield, and while he's not any great shakes, like you sort of allude to there, he did bring them a little bit of professionalism at that spot. They had Nacho playing at the time, and they obviously rushed him. I think they probably would admit that out of need. He wasn't quite ready, and that's okay. Like, you know, he's very young. I was kind of skeptical that was going to work, but I didn't blame the Braves for trying it. At the same time, you know, you do have Ozzie coming back. That's the one kind of fundamental difference. You know, in the outfield, Ronnie's not coming back this year. Whereas they think that Ozzie's going to be back in like a month, so you don't want to go crazy at second base, knowing that you do have a top 10 second baseman coming back when he's coming back. So they obviously pretty much immediately went to Merrifield as soon as he was healthy enough to play. And I think that's a kind of a plug and play guy. Again, a pretty low level starter at this point, but someone who is an upgrade on what they were getting from Nacho, and they can kind of just like hold the line until Ozzie gets back.
And he did have a pretty nice triple last night, so that kind of adds to things as well. Talking with Brad Rolin on the WaitFor.com hotline. Brad, a host of Hammer Territory and the Locked On Hawks podcast. Brad, it's always one of those tough things of trying to figure out of, hey, is this the turning point for the Braves? But with Philly losing five straight, the National League East down to five games, what the Braves have done, winning four straight, 6-1 in their last seven games, all of these sorts of things. Like, are you allowing yourself to start thinking about the possibility of the Braves getting back in this National League East race? Or is it more of just like, hey, focus on, getting that wild card and just getting into the playoffs in general?
I think a week ago, I would have basically told you that I had resigned the division. Not entirely. Like, I never said it was impossible, but the deficit was pretty significant. And you never want to write this team off. That famously they overcame a double-digit deficit against the Mets a few years ago, but they were, like I said, down 9.5 or something like that against a Phillies team that's been awesome all year long. But this recent slippage from the Phillies, now that it's a five-game deficit as we're talking, that's very doable. I still would be sure to say the Braves are the underdogs in the National League East. It's
Sure.
August 3rd. Down five games on August 3rd means that you are a pretty significant dog, but you're alive. I think, I saw one projection today. I think it was from Fangraphs. It was like 23% or so. That seems reasonable to me. Like one out of every four times you might overcome this. The Braves are, I think, better than what they've performed at so far this year. I think that's pretty clear in the underlying metrics and all those things. I don't know about Philly. They're obviously backsliding right now, but they're also quite good, and that's a loaded team. But yeah, it's now a situation where I think the most important thing is getting in the playoffs, where the Braves are favored heavily to do so. But the division is a kind of moved from very unlikely to somewhat unlikely, and that does matter.
Now, when it comes to a guy who's going to start tonight, it feels like so much of the conversation around Grant Holmes, when he first got this opportunity, was just the incredible story of a guy, working in the minor leagues for 10 seasons, finally gets his opportunity, but he's been really impressive. And I've been one kind of championing Grant Holmes throughout his time up with the Braves, just because it's like, hey, more often than not, this guy has really performed. Are we at a point where the narrative and the conversation around Grant Holmes can shift from really great story into legitimate part of this pitching staff, or you don't think we're there yet?
No, I think we've kind of gotten there. The story is still awesome, and I'm sure people will lead with that, whatever they talk about him. But he was really good in his first kind of like spot start earlier this week. He struck out 8 of the 18 batters that he faced and just like looked pretty dominant in a small sample size. He's been really good. I don't know if you can bank on that continuing. I don't think he's going to be like an absolutely dominant force, but as a long man, you kind of have to have somebody like him. And the Braves hadn't really settled on one guy like that this year. You got Jesse Chavez, who's as old as I am or older than I am at this point in time. And
Yeah.
I think Grant Holmes is certainly valuable. Like, is he on the same tier as Iglesias or Minter or Jimenez? No, but I do trust him so far. And what I've seen is not like smoke and mirrors. Like, the underlying stuff looks good with Grant Holmes. The stuff is really impressive. And I think he's pitching at that level where he deserves respect.
All right, Brad, last one on the Braves. Has Orlando Arcia turned a corner there? Like, is that something we can finally start to expect, or is this just too small a sample size?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to be this, because he has been like extremely hot in recent days in a way
Yeah.
that has been totally out of character. I believe it's a 13 game hitting streak as we're speaking right now, with an OPS over 1,000 in that sample size, like a bunch of home runs. And he had been so bad for so long that some people are talking about how like you never should give up on Orlando, and that's true. But it's also fair to say that he was one of the worst players in baseball by the stats up until about 2 weeks ago. And now he's doing this. So I always thought he was going to be better than he had been, if that makes sense, until mid-July. Like, his talent level is better than he had been performing. He also isn't going to suddenly be Babe Ruth. So it's, of course, somewhere in the middle. I think what this does is give you some confidence, if you're the Braves, that he's not going to keep killing you the way he had been killing you. Get back to kind of what his normal baseline is, which is this guy who is maybe an average hitter, maybe a little bit below that, but a guy who catches the ball at shortstop. I can, you know, bat lower in the lineup for you. He's hitting fifth now, which is kind of funny to me, but he's been hitting that way for the last, you know, couple of weeks now. So it's encouraging. It's a sign of him turning the corner, but also I would encourage folks not to get too carried away in the other direction.
All right. The other thing that Brad Rowland does and does very well is talks about the Atlanta Hawks on the Locked On Hawks podcast. So switching over to that, because there hasn't been a lot of news with this Hawks team this offseason, but we did see some things this past week. Specifically when it came to Bruno Fernando, a guy that not only showed some production in that center role when the Hawks were hit with injuries, but also, as you know, Brad, you know, just an incredible locker room guy, someone that the Hawks clearly wanted to keep around as they kept delaying the decision date for him as to whether they brought him back and made his contract guaranteed. They ultimately decide to waive him. He's on now to, I believe, the Toronto Raptors, but ultimately, like, how did we get here with Bruno Fernando, where the Hawks wanted him, but ultimately aren't able to keep him?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where he's kind of cursed by having this extremely team-friendly contract where he was the only guy that the Hawks could move on from without having to pay him. And while I do think that he was not the worst player on the roster, I do think that he is the guy that was easily moved on from. I'm glad you put it the way that you did. The Hawks clearly did not want to do this.
Yeah.
If they had wanted to do this, they would have cut him a month and a half ago when they could have. But in the end, you know, going up to the second moved deadline that they had to guarantee his contract, unless they did something else, they just couldn't justify keeping a fifth center on the roster, because they would have put them over the luxury tax. They'd have extra players on the roster. I'll save all the gory details, but it was basically a move that was procedural. They didn't want to have to do it, but it was the only logical way to go without making a trade of some kind. If they were just going to try to release somebody and kind of clear their roster, he was the guy that was logical because it was non-guaranteed, which is unfortunate because, like you, everybody loves Bruno. That includes me. That includes everybody around the Hawks. It's just the way that kind of things work sometimes. At the end of your roster, you got to make some painful choices.
Now, the Hawks did sign Dominic Barlow of the Spurs to a two-way contract. Look, that surprised me just because I thought that guy was better than a two-way contract. But outside that signing, moving forward, does it feel like the Hawks are pretty much done this offseason, or could you foresee some more moves being made?
Yeah, I mean, it's always probably the smart projection to say that a team is mostly done by August 3rd. That doesn't mean that they definitely are. Like, there are some things that could happen in the NBA around, like, deadlines and trades and stuff like that that could alter things and kind of open things up for the whole league. But, you know, generally speaking, I would certainly bet on the big stuff being done. They could still make a trade for one of the centers they have on their roster. I think Capella and Nance at Okongwu, having all three of them is a little bit overlapping. I think Capella and Nance could certainly be still trade guys. I think DeAndre Hunter, if they got the right package, they could trade him, that kind of thing. But I think if you're doing the betting odds, they're more likely than not to kind of stand pat as far as the big stuff right now, just because the whole league kind of goes quiet in August.
Yeah, that's one of the DeAndre Hunter piece is the one that I had really been big on. Like, I thought the Hawks would move on from him, and just simply the fact that we hadn't seen that happen, bit of a surprise to me just because of how things ended. But maybe it's the contract side of things that keep teams away. All right, that is Brad Rowland, host of Hammer Territory and the Locked On Hawks podcast. Make sure you follow Brad on social media at BT Rowland. Brad, anywhere else you want people to check out your stuff at?
No, that's it. You did a great job of plugging me, Caleb, better than I do myself. So I very much appreciate that. And thanks for having me on, as always.
Hey, man, appreciate you coming on. And we'll hopefully be doing this in a month or two when it comes to the Hawks and some moves and some other things going on. But yeah, Brad Rowland, Hammer Territory and Locked On Hawks. Follow him on social media at BT Rowland. When we get back on the Dopey Millennial Show, going to get into a Check the Tape segment, let you listen to some audio from Kirby Smart and others. When we get back, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.